Good morning.
Good morning, sir. What is your name, sir?
My name is Cecil Kincaid.
Okay, sir.
The C number is 046261, sir.
Okay, thank you. And just hold on for a moment. We understand that this is a parole hearing, and the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will reach your hearing at this time, sir. That's where we will get started in just a moment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. White.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak before you.
Okay. Sir, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, I can.
Okay. Could you please just state your name, your ADC number for us for the record?
Yes, sir. My name is Cecil Kincaid, 046261.
Okay, Mr. Kincaid, you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, sir. I am going to introduce you to the board members that are going to be conducting your hearing this morning. You have the Honorable Luis Quinones, the Honorable David Neal. In the middle, you have the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. And to my immediate left, you have the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse. And sir, my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as your panel lead today, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Okay. I'm going to go over some information with you, sir. And then you can correct any information if you feel that is wrong. And then we'll be giving you the opportunity to present whatever information you'd like to present to the board, okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is a parole hearing for Mr. Kincaid for regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge. He was certified eligible for parole on July 14th of 07 and is serving a death sentence, a death or life sentence for first-degree murder, and a concurrent 10-year and 6-month sentence for armed robbery. Mr. Kincaid has a minimal amount of programming, and his last program appears to be in 2009. He does have a release plan. According to his release plan, Mr. Kincaid plans to reside at his approved residence with his fiance. His family and SSI will provide assistance to meet his expenses, medical, food, clothing, and housing need. He has one discipline infraction in the past 5 years for disrupting count in February of 2013, which was a minor. However, he has had numerous disciplinary infractions since being incarcerated to include an escape charge in November of 2007. Mr. Kincaid was granted regular parole in June of 2009. Then in March of 2013, this parole was revoked. In May of 2014, he was granted home arrest. Then on March 3rd, 2015, after being taken into custody, he had a revocation hearing that was continued. This violation hearing was for changing his place of residence and being an absconder. Then on March 9th of 2015, after being continued, the hearing was held and he was found in violation and continued on home arrest with amended conditions. On December 7th of 2015, his home arrest status was revoked for failure to submit a urine specimen for drug testing. Then on August 10th, 2016, Mr. Kincaid was again granted home arrest. He was subsequently arrested and had a revocation hearing on May 1st of 2017 after testing positive for THC. He was found in violation and was again continued on home arrest with the previous terms and conditions. On December 28th, Mr. Kincaid had another revocation hearing for his use of alcohol. At this time, his home arrest status was again revoked. Mr. Kincaid has been released on parole status by this board on 5 separate occasions. Each time he violated the terms and conditions of his parole, resulting in his revocation, the most recent being December 28th of 2017. According to the present offense on April 1st, 1982, the defendant and his accomplice, Thomas Pearson, murdered the victim, Jacob Goldberg. The motive for this murder was a $10,000 gambling debt owed to Mr. Kincaid, after the victim was murdered. He was taken to the desert and buried in a shallow grave. Mr. Kincaid denied shooting the victim, but admitted to assisting in burying the victim's body, taking the victim's car, and covering up the murder. Further stating he was trying to protect his brother, Thomas Pearson, when he told 3 other people he shot the victim. The defendant, Mr. Kincaid, and his accomplice, Thomas Pearson, were both tried together in a joint trial and found guilty by a jury. Each was found guilty of 1 count of first-degree murder and 1 count of armed robbery. On appeal, the Arizona Supreme Court reversed the conviction and sentence and remanded the matter for separate trials. Mr. Kincaid in the second trial was found guilty by a jury of first-degree murder and armed robbery and received the same sentence. He appealed this conviction and the judgment and sentence was affirmed. His co-defendant, Thomas Pearson, was acquitted by a jury in the second trial. Is that information about right, sir?
There's several things there that I would like to go over, if I may.
You certainly can, sir.
First of all, when I was violated for the first situation, I had started a 501c3 nonprofit organization and was able to maintain that one out of 25 in Arizona. I had 14 apartments of which I helped and helped people get off of drugs, alcohol, and other things. I did this for 3.5 years until I was forced to close the place up because of a bed bug infestation. We moved to a place out in Goodyear, and we were a veteran, a Vietnam veteran. And during this time, we had picked up a home that was a lease option to buy, a real nice home. And the lady that was selling us the home was in the military. Mr. Obama had stipulated in one of his laws that no person involved with the military or in the military could have their house foreclosed upon. Yet, unbecoming of me, I did not know that this woman had not made the payments on the home for the past 2 years, the mortgage, when I was buying the home for her. It was, like I said, a lease option, and I completed the 6 months that I gave her $1,200 a month. I never had any infractions or anything of that nature during the time that I ran for 3.5 years, all the time out there helping people, and I helped over several hundred people that I ran through my program there. And this board might know that I suffer from a number of different illnesses, from first stage of cirrhosis, third stage kidney disease, prostate cancer, degenerative bone disease in my back. I've got rheumatoid arthritis running throughout all of my body. And the reason I'm stipulating this too will come into play as I talk. What had happened was is that on the day that we were supposed to take over the home there, I called her, I made my last payment to her, and everything was fine. My parole officer, out of 3.5 years, never made a second visit to me. I see him once a month, and I was able to go to different places. If I wanted to go out to for the weekend, out to Pleasant Lake to go fishing or something else, I didn't need permission to do that. As long as I was there on the 16th of each month to visit with my parole officer. Well, on the day in question, when we were supposed to take over the house, the Veterans Administration was going to give me the loan. We got a knock on our door, and I just seen my parole officer about a week before this, and he knew that everything was going fine with me. And at that time, we found out that the lady in question had made a payment on the house for a mortgage for 2 years, and that she had just gotten out of the military, and they foreclosed upon the house. I scrambled because I didn't have very much money at that time, and I wouldn't have another check coming into me for another week. So I ended up, I had to leave the house. So I took my phone and my laptop and the other things down to the pawn shop, able for me and Kim to get a place there at the hotel room for until I was able to get a check and get another place. I should have phoned my parole officer at that time and let him know what was going on. But he had stopped by, he was going through the area and stopped by, and he'd seen the people that was cleaning up. And as I asked where Mr. King Cave was, he says, well, the place had been foreclosed upon. So he tried to phone my phone, which it did answer, and he left a message for me saying, please get in contact with me, let me know what's going on, Cecil. You know, I might stop by your house. And it was a week before I got money and able to get the phone back out of the hot shop. And when I did, I instantly phoned and told him what had happened. He said, and he says, I've been trying to get a hold of you. You should have phoned me. And I said, sir, I knew that I would be seeing you on the 16th, and I thought that I didn't want to be left on the street, so I hunted this stuff where I would be able to have a hotel room until me and Kim was able to get another place, and I got another place. He says, well, yeah, I had no choice, so I had to violate you because I couldn't get a hold of you. And he says, I had an H number as scout. I said, I didn't have a scout. And he says, no, I understand that. He says, but what's going to happen is they're going to pick you up one day. I said, no, sir, they're not going to pick me up. I will come down immediately, which I did. My parole officer even stated before the board that he did not believe it was that big of an offense. It was a mistake. I should have made a phone call, and that was my mistake in doing so. The board has just brought up an issue that about me being involved in a situation where I had a dirty UA for THC. This is from a doctor's prescription. And Mr. White was there present, and he was one of the ones that released me after the doctor had turned around and written a letter to the board stating why I was placed under this medication. It was detrimental to my health. I'd lost over 40 pounds. And so the board released me. On the other impression, where I missed a UA, when I got to prison, they had no cell phones. When I did over 30-some years, I got outside, and the technology out there is just overpowering. I still have problem getting on Facebook and some of the other things, which I was lucky to be with a woman that has a degree in business management and marketing and was able to do the computer things and show me some things to be able to even get on Facebook. And one day, because I have a 91 in my brain from being 4-stage liver cirrhosis, I have a memory loss, short-time memory loss. So the parole officers put a text on there for me that I would receive each morning from the task color line that would have all of my issues for me to go on that day or not to go on that day. It had all the colors there. This went fine for almost a year. And then one day I wake up, I look at my jail because it buzzed every morning, and I looked at it, and my color was not there, so I went on to work. I got back off of work, and my parole officer phoned me and told me, he says, I need for you to come in tomorrow. And I says, is there a reason? He says, yes. He says, I have to violate you. And I said, well, what? I didn't do anything wrong. He says, well, you missed your UA. I said, no, I've got my phone right here, sir. He said, bring your phone down. They in turn brought the phone down and seen that I had what was called a drop signal, a drop text. It wasn't the text of the day. It was the one prior to that day. And he came before the board, explained the situation, and the board asked him, would you have violated Mr. Kincaid if we didn't have the stipulations that we have on him? He said, no, we would not have done so. The board released me. On those occasions there, each time, there was not a justified reason. I mean, I should have, there was no way that I knew that I was looking. I don't know that much about the technology out there. I made a mistake, which the board reinstated me for. On the issue of, I'm under career criminal at all. I have one isolated incident that I have regretted since the moment that it happened. My participation in that incident, I regret it now and will regret it for the rest of my life. That's one reason that whenever I step outside, I try to help as many people as I can. I spoke informed in public speaking outside. I have a number of churches that I deal with outside. I spoke before the YMCA, where counselors would bring troubled youth and try to help them. And I've done this for several years. And I continue to do everything I can to try to help others. I wasn't completely truthful with this board the last time I was before it, because I was afraid with my health issues and everything that I had that I would be coming back to prison, and I knew that I would get no help in here. Their policy is that you have to be sentenced to a year and a half before they're able to go through a committee to give you any type of medical treatment. And I knew that I would. I was afraid of that. I was afraid of dying in here. And when I came before the board last time, I told them that I had Drexen Nyquil. Now, what had happened was that the board sometimes doesn't understand the issues that a person like me faces whenever I go outside. To find a job out there or even a place to live is almost impossible. If you do find a place to live, it's usually in a slum lord area. Nobody wants to give a place to live to a person that has homicide charge. I was able to overcome these things, and now we have a decent place, a decent area. Or in the beginning, I was forced to live in a place that had nothing but drugs, prostitution, and gang activity going on. And when I came before the board last time, to find a job out there, most jobs have dealings with the computer life and everything else. I am not computer savvy, as I said. It's mind-boggling for me. I ended up, whenever I needed extra money, I get $735 a month. I'm sure that any individual sitting on this board knows how difficult it is to live off the $735 a month. It's never been in my mind, as I said, I'm not a career criminal. It's never even appeared in my mind even to go out and do another crime. And I've proved this in over 7.5 years that I've been out on parole. I have, when you and I go out to get a job, I have to turn around and tell the person that I'm going before that I am a felon. The law requires me to do this. The first thing I have to overcome is to explain to the man that I was involved with a homicide situation. Most people at that point do not want to hire you. The next step I have is my health issues for their insurance purposes. And if I'm able to overdo that, then there becomes another issue with my age. I'm older than anybody there on that board. And if I'm able to overcome that issue, then I have to overcome the fact that I'm on a monitor. And I have to fill an itinerary out in a week in advance. So I have to have my boss let me know where I'm going to eat lunch, where I'm going to be working, what I'm doing. And it's so much to put on anybody out there to give me a chance to be hired for anything. So even under my health issues, because that my rent was $600, the electricity, my insurance, the payment to the board, what I would do is, even under my conditions, I would hold up a sign. You've probably been driving by and see people holding up signs for restaurant things and for pawn shops and things of this nature. So I would go out and I would do this for 8 hours standing out there in the heat. I was only be able to do it one day and then I'd take the next day off. And I had three places that I would go to make my extra money. For 2 years I had been walking my dog and I'd even spoken to my neighbors and everything else. I never really knew that I was on parole or anything. It's not something that I just jump out and tell everybody. But I had several words with this man that lived 2 houses down from us. One day I asked him what kind of work he did, and he says, well, I own the painting business. I said, well, sir, if you ever need any help, I certainly would appreciate it, and I'd be happy to help you. He says, yes. He said, if you're serious about it. And I said, well, there's a few things I have to tell you about myself first. After explaining everything to him, he talked to my parole officer. And he decided to give me a chance. He said, it'll only be part-time work, but I pay $120 a day, and I'll guarantee you 3 days. For me, this is a miracle. I ended up, I was working for him for about 3 weeks, and everything was going fine. I was able to catch up on all my bills, pay my parole status, and I promised him that I would be there for him. And because that was his main issue, they had to have somebody that he depended on that would be there whenever he called them. On this particular day, Kim and I had, she's 15, 16 years younger than me. I guess it happens with every man, and I was embarrassed to ever mention this before the board the last time I spoke with them. But I have a problem with intimacy. Yeah. Being able to be intimate with my woman. It's an embarrassing factor to say when you feel like you're less than a man anymore with all the other health issues I've got going on. And a woman needs certain things and I can't provide it anymore. And then go out and get one of the Viagra or something like that, they cost $25 a piece. I can't afford that. My insurance wouldn't help me out with anything of that nature. And it's difficult knowing that you're dying and that you're half the man anymore. And I ended up that day, we got into an argument, and Kim was sorry for the thing she said, and we've worked those things out. Since I've been in here, we found out that the Veterans Administration will help me with those issues. And then I'll be able to take care of those once I get out, along with the treatments that I was getting for my liver cirrhosis and my prostate cancer. I was 8 weeks into that whenever I was invited back. Anyway, to get back to what I was saying, on that day in question, about two hours after we had the little argument, and it was a few people that was having dinner with us, and as couples would talk and so forth, and it just came out that I was unable to perform anymore. And it hurt. And Kim was completely sorry for ever going in that direction. She apologized over and over, and I know that she meant it. We talked since then, and we've gotten things straightened out, and she's with me on this situation now. But about 2 hours after that, I was sitting at the house, and I got a phone call, and my last-year-named brother passed away. It was a devastating day for me. It was the last one that I had. And we were close. He was a minister. And I was raised in a Christian family. And I believe very much in God. When a man comes close to death, knows that he's dying, he reaches out for his higher power. For me, it's the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And that's one of the main reasons I've done everything I can in here and out there and talking to people, because this is a waste of life. To go into being an addict, whether it be in drugs or alcohol or whatever it may be, it only leads to two places. Either prison or death. Our criminal behavior. I know in my heart that there will never be a point that I'll ever commit another crime. I have been under scrupulating situations and difficulties numerous times, and it's never even come into my mind. I've always been able to find something. God has always led me in the direction where I was able to, like I said, I would pick up a sign and go out and make my extra money that way. Anyway, I got a phone call from my boss telling me that he needed me to be to work at 5 o'clock the next morning. And I had all these issues going on in my head, and I couldn't go to sleep. But I was afraid of losing this job. You might have heard the saying that sometimes you do the wrong things for the right reasons. Well, that's what I thought I was doing when I did what I did. But I'm here to tell you there is no wrong or right reason to do the wrong thing. Wrong is always wrong. I ended up turning around, and I didn't have any Benadryl to try to help me sleep. So I drank some NyQuil with a couple of shots of brandy with some hot milk in it. I had already been, for the last 2 years, they've only given me 2 UAs per month. I just finished taking the UA the day before this issue came up, and that would be another 3 or 4 days before I would have another UA at the beginning of the next month. They always switch these UAs around to make sure that you never know when they're going to come about. So I thought that I would be fine. I'd be able to get to sleep, get up, and hold my job, which meant so much to me after 20 years to find somebody to accept me. I was wrong in what I did. I've never repeated a mistake made. Not with the phone, not with the doctor. I even stopped taking the medication to cause the issue. And I know in my heart that nothing like this will ever happen again. I've had a lot of time to soul search in the last 9 months. So I do have an address that I could go to. But At this point in my life, I know that Kim will understand. My CPO 3 and I, after I sat down and prayed for a while, I asked him if he could phone this place up. It's called Victory Outreach. I wanted to give the board another option for me and to show them how sincere that I am, that I will never ever be back before this board again. Never will I do anything for any reason that will bring me back. I don't want to die in here. This board may remember Ray Guyason. This board released him on December 11th. The average time for us to get out of here after the board releases us is about 2.5 months. The board will never see Ray again. Ray's been over 30 years in prison with me. He is like we followed each other throughout the time. I would be at one place, he would come. He would be at one place, I would come. We both had the same total loss. Ray has four-stage liver cirrhosis as well as I do. 2 months ago, after being out for 3 months after the board released him, he died of liver cirrhosis, so the board will never see him again. This is one of my biggest fears, is dying in here, because ADOC has a policy that states you must be sentenced to a year and a half before, because it takes a year to go through the committees to get any type of treatment. And since my statute requires that be brought before the board every 6 months, I do not fall in the line of being treated. They tell me that I can wait until I get out. I had gotten 8 weeks of treatment and still had another 6 weeks to go when I was violated. I still can get the treatment out there to prolong my life. And if I don't, then the reason I brought up the Ray and our affiliations and everything else is that my cirrhosis is there. I was told when I first come back in, my last blood test outside, that the hepatitis C had almost completely vanished from my system. But it takes time for the cirrhosis to heal itself. The liver is the only thing that does, the organ that we have that does heal itself. And I just don't want to die here. I asked the CPO if I could make a phone call. I made it to Victory Outreach. This is a 6-month program. For the first 3 months, you have to stay. I cannot go outside. I cannot go anyplace without an escort. This is how serious I am that I'm willing to go to any steps. I'm not a drug addict nor an alcoholic. Kim had already made arrangements for me to go to 2 meetings out there with the board, but I need to be around Christian fellowship, I believe. I need to be around God. I need to be around the situation where I know that this board will see me doing everything that I could possibly do. And for 3 months out there, in the first 3 months, they have you escorted every place you go. And my CPO says, it sounds like another prison. I says, yes, but it's something that I need to be around. I can go to my apartment, but I don't think that's the right thing for me at this point. I want to be around Christian fellowship, not only because it leads you in the right directions and it keeps you from doing anything that you might do, but because of my health issues and everything else. And the reason I'm coming so forward with you now is because I am not, because I fear you, which I do, to be honest. But I fear God more. And I know if I die, I've got to be right with him. And I know I cannot make any more mistakes that I've made. This is the first dirty, actual dirty UA that I've had in 10 years. In over 2,600 UAs inside here, and over 358 through TASC and the other UAs that I've taken outside, I've never had an issue with alcohol. I have never done any heavy narcotics in my life. The only thing I've ever been found guilty was for smoking marijuana. I'm a product of the 60s and 70s. And I only did that recreationally. But I don't do that. I haven't done that in a long time now. I appreciate this board listening to what I say, and I No, honestly, and the board knows that I've never repeated a mistake made. Even those mistakes that I had no control over. I always now, whenever I get those texts, I not only look at the text, but it reminds me to make a phone call also. So I make that phone call to make sure that mistake would never happen again. All the other issues that have been brought back before, the board had my parole officer stand before them, and the board of the parole officer said that, yes, that they would have never violated me for it if I didn't have those special stipulations put on me. All I can say is that this board will, if it gives me another chance, that it will not see me again. It's, my life depends on being able to get out there and get the treatments that are necessary for me to prolong my life.
Okay, well, Mr. Kincaid, let me first of all thank you for being honest with the board about the license and with the nightclub and the actual drinking. But and you've been out 5 separate times. You've been out. And 3 of those times you were revoked. And 2 of those times this board determined and gave you an opportunity and continued your hearing and reinstated you on home arrest. And each of those times you subsequently wind up being violated for each of those times that you were arrested. You, in June of 2009, you were granted regular parole. In May of 2014, you were granted home arrest. In March of 2015, you had been revoked, but they continued your hearing. In August 10th, you were granted home arrest. And then on May 1st, you tested positive for the marijuana, and they found you in violation, but they didn't revoke you. They continued you on home arrest. Then on December 28th, you had another revocation for the use of alcohol, which you just explained that you had the NyQuil and the alcohol, but you just had an incident with the marijuana where the board had continued your hearing, I mean, had reinstated you on your parole, sir, so it seems as though...
No, sir, it wasn't marijuana. It was marijuana. It was given to me by a doctor's prescription.
Okay,
it was not marijuana.
It was tested.
A pill called Marinol that the doctor gave me.
Okay, it says that.
Away from
Mr. Kincaid, it says you tested positive for THC.
Yes, it had THC in the pill. The reason that the doctor gave it to me was because of I had lost a lot of pounds.
But you told that. Listen to me, Mr. Kincaid. Mr. Kincaid. You told that story to the board, and as a result of it, the board continued to on home arrest. They didn't, you know, they let you back out and continued to on home arrest. And then you turn around on December 28th. And that's when you did the alcohol, but when you came before this board, and that was just been, it hasn't been quite a year ago, that you went before this board, and you told this board that it wasn't alcohol, that you had taken NyQuil. However, we do appreciate you being honest, and you saying that it wasn't a NyQuil. But what I'm saying is, Mr. Kincaid, you've been before this board 5 separate times, you had your freedom 5 separate times. This board has on 2 occasions taken your word. On one occasion, the board actually had to go back and get some letters from TASC because you stated that it wasn't the alcohol, and we actually had to have a TASC official come in here and testify before this board, in which they subsequently violated you on that violation. So I do, you know, understand, and I understand what you're saying, but you have 5 separate occasions to be out, and each of those occasions through some action of yours, that you wind up getting violated, and it's a very serious thing when this board gives you instructions that you're not to drink alcohol or be involved or have a negative or unsuitable for testing UA, that you do it. And it's apparently not only did this board put faith in you, but your PO put faith in you, sir, and you just continue to violate that. So I do understand the circumstances and what you're saying. But I do have an issue with what has happened, that, you know, there just seems to always be a story about what happened, as well as the incident when this incident happened. You were involved in a homicide, but, you know, you also, you know, denied shooting the victim and stated that you didn't shoot the victim, but you were there, you assisted in burying the victim, you assisted in taking the car, you assisted in covering up the murder, but you weren't the one who pulled the trigger. And then you guys had a trial together, and in that trial, you know, you both were convicted of first-degree murder and armed robbery. And then after that, you had an appeal. The court said that, you know, you had a right to have the trial separately, and then, you know, you had that trial, and another jury convicted you of the same crime, and they acquitted it. You know, your co-defendant, he got acquitted. So, yes, sir, yes.
He got acquitted, sir, because I refused to testify against him. You're in prison.
Everything.
I would have testified against him. I would have just as much gave up my life.
Mr. Kincaid, every situation that you're involved in, you have an excuse for it. You don't take the responsibility for it.
I'm not trying to give you an excuse. I know that.
Well, I'm telling you, Mr. Kincaid, is that there's an excuse for every infraction. You had five opportunities to be released by this board. In every instance, you violated, and you had an excuse for your violation. Today was the first time that you said that you admitted that, you know, the last time you were before this board, was that you said that it was the NyQuil, and there's the NyQuil, and you was going through this whole explanation of how the NyQuil tested positive for you, and that it wasn't the NyQuil that you hadn't been drinking. You promised this board that you hadn't been drinking, and now you come back before us and tell us you're telling the truth, and that you did have some brandy, I believe you said it was. You had NyQuil and brandy with some milk. And so, sir, I'm just trying to understand at some point.
I understand, sir.
Okay, well, Mr. Kincaid, I'm going to see if the board has
any. I'd like to reiterate, sir, that on the other occasions that I was brought back, each time this board asked if my parole officer, if they would violate me, and each time they said no, but they found out. And I'm not trying to make an excuse, I'm trying to explain to you what took place within those three times. And each time, I would have never been brought back for the drop text or the doctor gave.
Well, Mr. Kincaid, you said that the parole officer said that sir, it's not the parole officer's fault that you got that you didn't go take it away. It's not the parole officer's fault that you missed it. It's not the parole officer's fault that you wind up with the THC. It wasn't the parole officer's fault that happened. It wasn't the parole officer's
technology.
Okay, so I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions. So there's still no additional questions coming before the board, so I'm going to see if there's anything else you'd like to say to the board without repeating yourself, sir.
Yes, sir. I made mistakes. I know that, and I understand totally, sir, where you're coming from and how it looks. I also know that I've reached a point in my life where there is no minor issues or a concern. No matter what the issue that is brought before me, I cannot afford to do not one simple anything, nothing. If I have to sit on my couch for 24 hours a day until I'm end up dying, then that's what I'll do. I'm asking this board to give me one last chance. If I fail in any way whatsoever, the board can do whatever they want to. I'm asking for one more chance. I understand that there was issues before. Some of those issues, as I explained, I know what I've done. I know that I will never ever repeat any of these things again. I do not want to die in this prison. And I know that as long as I stay in a walk with God, and to be able to change my ways, to be able to be around those people. That's why I've been accepted to this place. That I will never be back here again.
Okay, Mr.
If I fail in any way, this board to keep me in for whenever they want to, because that's how sure I am that I will not make another mistake for anything. There is no wrong for right.
Okay.
I understand this.
Okay, Mr. Kincaid. The board's going to go into discussion. So while the board's in discussion, Mr. Kincaid, I'm going to ask you to remain on the line. However, Mr. Kincaid, I'm going to ask you to remain silent while the board's in discussion, okay? The board's now going into discussion. This is Mr. Kincaid. We've had him before this board before. I do appreciate Mr. Kincaid being honest on this time that he's come before this board. He says he wasn't honest the last time before this board, which was in December 28th of 2017. He had a hearing, which was less than a year ago, for the use of alcohol. At that time, he gave us the same story that he, you know, hadn't drank alcohol, but he's not an alcoholic, he doesn't do alcohol, but this time he has a story for actually taking the alcohol. He said he had the brand, and he went through it, but he's been out five separate times. He was out in 2009, he was granted 2014, 2015, 2016, he was granted home arrest or continued. That's five separate times that he's been out, and each time he's managed to violate, but he's always had an excuse, board's reason for violating, and I'm just not convinced that if Mr. Kincaid was released again, that he wouldn't repeat this same behavior that he's been exhibiting the entire times that he has been released from custody. And I do remember this last hearing, and we got some of the same story about his reasoning for not doing alcohol at the same time. Therefore, I do not think it would be in the best interest of the community to release Mr. Kincaid back out on home arrest, absolute discharge, or regular parole at this time. However, I'm willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues. Mr. Kincaid.
I'm probably just going to reiterate what you're saying, but Mr. Kincaid makes a very persuasive and long-winded case for his parole, but I do not have confidence that he would adhere to the conditions of his release. Thank you, sir.
Therefore, I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Kincaid regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge.
Second.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay, motion by myself, second by Ms. Neal. Agreed, Ms. Rittenhouse, Mr. Quinones, Dr. Wright. Because of the time, this is not eligible for a parole set-off. This is going to mark his reasons is that it was a serious and violent offense, loss of human life. I'm also going to mark that he's violated previous probation or parole as he was out five times and was revoked. I'm going to mark repeat offender, but I'm only marking that because he's been out and keeps violating once he has had the opportunity to get out. I'm also going to mark a lack of programming. He didn't have a release plan, so I'm not going to mark that, but I am going to mark no family and community support since I didn't see those things included in this file. I also want to make those are going to be the reasons unless the board has any addition. Mr. Kincaid?
Yes.
Sir, the board has voted to deny you regular parole, home arrest, or an absolute discharge. Did you hear the reasons for denial, sir? Okay, so you will be certified eligible within 6 months or so to come back before this board for a parole hearing. That is going to conclude your hearing at this time, Mr. Kincaid. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, gentlemen.